Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 526, an interview with Ed Haslam. This is being recorded on September 11th of the year 2005. It is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to the For the Record airwaves someone we have not heard from in some time, but someone who has become a major feature of the For the Record archives and inventory, Ed Haslam, the author of Mary Fairy and the Monkey Virus. Ed, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave.
A lot of listeners, Ed, have been asking, you know, how you're doing, what you're doing, what comes next after Mary Fairy, etc. There was some material, I guess, on the 40th anniversary of the JFK assassination that people saw on the History Channel that brought to mind your book. And so you've been very much on the minds of the listeners, and it's good to have you back.
Good. Well, I appreciate you having me back.
Now, Ed, but before we get into the subject of New Orleans, and we're going to be talking about New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina, you are, of course, a native of New Orleans. Tell us just a little bit about your book. For those who are newer listeners and are not familiar with your book, if you could just tell us a bit about your book and how they can get a hold of it.
Okay. Well, first of all, I lived in New Orleans for 35 years, and therefore I know a lot about that city and what went on in it.
You know what it means to miss New Orleans.
Yeah. And this relates both to the Mary Fairy subject and to the Katrina subject.
Mm-hmm.
On the Mary Fairy side, I heard a lot of stuff coming up which made me very suspicious about the murder of a particular doctor that happened in 1964. I investigated that murder. That ultimately is what the book Mary Fairy and the Monkey Virus is about. However, investigating that one murder, I got into, which occurred and was brought up during the Jim Garrison investigation, the JFK thing, I got into a much bigger issue that had to do with the contamination of the polio virus with a cancer, the polio vaccine with a cancer-causing virus. And that book is an explanation of that horrific set of events where it appears that they, the federal government of the United States, realized that there was a cancer-causing virus in the polio vaccine after they had released 100 million doses of it. Now, if one wants to read about this, the books are available from me, the author. I print them as I ship them, so they're always there. It is $25, and it is to Edward Haslam, H-A-S-L-A-M, P.O. Box 15381, Bradenton, that's B-R-A-D-E-N-T-O-N, Florida, 34280. So that's what the book is, and that's how one gets it. And I will also mention on the book that it appears that I have a publisher who will be releasing the book probably under another title in the future. But if you want a author-signed original underground manuscript, this is how you get it.
Okay, said to Ed Haslam, P.O. Box 15381, Bradenton, Florida, 34280. By the way, Ed's last name is H-A-S-L-A-M. And it's a fascinating tale which talks about the contamination of the polio vaccine with a cancer-causing virus, talks about some of the things that took place on the ground vis-a-vis the assassination of President Kennedy, shedding an entirely new light on it and opening up a new vista of investigation. By the way, parenthetically, I want to add, Ed, that since your book came out, another book has come out talking about the same general subject, not the murder of Mary Sherman and the JFK-related activities in New Orleans, but talking about the SV-40, and specifically that's a book called The Virus and the Vaccine by Debbie Bookchin and Jim Schumacher, which corroborates a lot of what you had to say about the SV-40 and the contamination of the vaccine.
Right, and the other thing that's happened is that episode on the History Channel you were talking about, which had an interview with someone who was inside the laboratory that I talked about, has been a separate interview with her, but essentially the same content, is being released on the internet now as a DVD sale. So that's a development in that area. So that story, which got pulled off the History Channel, it, with no one ever mentioning why they pulled that part of the story, they pulled the other episodes and it went with it, is being made available.
Well, that's good to hear, and we will at some point, I'm sure, in the future, we will be revisiting the subject material of Mary Ferry and the monkey virus. And this is the anniversary, of course, of the September 11th attacks, and many people have been extrapolating from that disaster to the current disaster. Obviously, we're talking about, as I'm, for the benefit of people who hear this down the line, so to speak, because the For the Record shows are being archived by WFMU. We are at September 11th of 2005 in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, which devastated much of the Gulf Coast and in particular devastated the historical and cultural center of New Orleans. And we're going to talk about what happened. Ed's going to talk about some of the things that didn't happen. Bear in mind, as you listen to Ed's insights about what took place in during Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath, and about what didn't, Ed is intimately familiar with New Orleans. So this comes from someone who knows what's going on the ground down there, or I guess perhaps on the bottom of the body of water.
Yeah, Dave, let me suggest to all the listeners that you turn on your computer right now, because we're going to be suggesting that you do things on the computer with Internet access. And if you need to get your kids off of it, or you need to give it time to load and warm up, go ahead and get started, because that's going to be a critical issue in the later part of this conversation.
Okay, now again, for people here down the line, some of the material vis-a-vis Hurricane Katrina and the satellite photos of this area in question may not be online way, you know, several years in the future, but if you're hearing this in the relatively short aftermath of September 11, 2005, those pictures will be available. Go ahead, Ed, tell them what it is that they should be dialing up and what they should be looking for.
Well, I'll get to that in a minute when they got their machines warmed up.
Okay.
I wanted to mention, we said I was from New Orleans, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was in New Orleans for 35 years, and for many of those years, about half of them, I was a competitive sailor, okay? So I spent my weekends on Lake Pontchartrain operating out of the yacht harbor right there. And this yacht harbor is practically a stone's throw from where the levee broke. Okay, I also had friends that lived in the neighborhood around where the levee broke, and I used to hang out with them. And we used to go walk the levees. And literally, I have stood on the bridge, well, it's a new bridge, but I stood on the old bridge, and the levees around there hundreds of times. I mean, this is a neighborhood I know like the back of my hand. And when I listen to all the misinformation that's floating around the Internet right now about the levee break in New Orleans, it really makes me heartsick, because they have so many things so basically wrong. Let me give you an overview of this.
Just one thing. Before we actually get into what happened vis-a-vis the levee and breaking and covering the misinformation on the Internet, do you want to take a little bit of time to cover New Orleans as an economic and political entity? Because, again, in the aftermath of the hurricane, we've heard all about, you know, the jazz and the Mardi Gras and the tremendous cultural life there. But as you pointed out, and as we discussed in the early part of our three-hour interview done almost 10 years ago now, New Orleans is a very, very powerful economic and political entity. Would you like to discuss that before we actually get into that, or do you want to just move directly into
sure.
it?
Sure, and that's a great place to start, Dave. People know about New Orleans due to the jazz, the Mardi Gras, the food, the tourism. They think of it as a lightweight city full of entertainment. And what you have... Someone once called New Orleans an inevitable city built in an impossible place. And I think that's the most brilliant comment anyone could ever make on it.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it inevitable is it is the port, the major seaport of the largest river in the most industrialized and wealthiest country in the entire world. Okay? It is the mouth of the Mississippi. Right? All the grain that gets raised in the Midwest, all the machines that get made in the Rust Belt, all that stuff that goes out to other countries flows out of New Orleans. And they fill up those boats with, you know, bananas and stuff, and they bring it back. But the point is, this city is part of the economic life of the United States in a way that no other city is. Secondly, it's a major oil and gas producer. And when that hurricane came through, it did two things. One, it knocked out one single facility, the Venice Superport facility. That one facility is the only facility in the United States that is able to receive super tankers. These are things that are too big to go through the Panama Canal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
These super tankers are the largest things that float, that carry oil. And they pull up to one place in the United States. They hook up a pipe to them, a tube, and they suck out the oil. All right, 15 to 20% of the oil in the United States comes out of this one facility. I mean, of the stuff that we pump into our cars. And that facility got shut down. And the other thing is the area itself, which is on a geological fault, is one of the largest areas that produces natural gas and oil in the United States. And they're talking a destruction that will take them at least a year to reestablish. I mean, they lost 15, 20 oil platforms, but there were 5,000 natural gas platforms in an area that was 8 feet deep that when they flew over in the helicopter, they couldn't even find them. I mean, you completely wiped them out. And so this has an economic effect on everybody in the United States. And this is just the effect of the storm itself without getting into the response, the politics, or anything else. Just
mm-hmm.
the natural effect of what happens when a Category 4, Category 5 hurricane hits this area.
Okay.
So that's, that's it in a nutshell.
So basically, as we hear the account of what happened vis-a-vis this canal and the Drifter Lane neighborhood, which people will hopefully be bringing up on their computers so they can take a closer visual look at what we're going to be describing verbally, remember that New Orleans is the northernmost port of the Caribbean and is also the gateway to the Mississippi River, the largest commercial waterway in the United States, and a major epicenter for the refining and unloading of fossil fuels, both natural gas and, of course, petroleum. Ed, with that in mind, what happened in New Orleans? You emailed me in the immediate aftermath of the hurricane pointing out something that I had not heard elsewhere, and I should stress in that regard that you know, I haven't been following the coverage 24/7, so it's possible that what you're talking about has been covered elsewhere. I have not heard of it, however.
Okay, well, let's start with the basic point. The city of New Orleans suffered a catastrophic flood. All right, this is a flood of the major area of the city proper that was 8 feet deep. Okay, this flood, and what I mean by the major city, I mean if you're in your area, you're talking about San Francisco. If somebody said, "Well, Fremont flooded," well, that's not San Francisco. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So New Orleans has always had flooding problems on its eastern area. Why? Because it's a bunch of marsh and it has no protection. Every time a hurricane comes in, the water comes in. Okay, and there were some incidental things. But what happened in New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina was a historic event. The city itself suffered its worst nightmare, and that was the break of a levee separating it from Lake Pontchartrain. And what happens when that happens, and Lake Pontchartrain is above sea level, why? Because the hurricane just blew all the water from the Gulf into it. Then all that water falls into New Orleans. and creates a catastrophic flood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at what happened with Hurricane Katrina, you basically wind up with about four things to talk about. In the very east of New Orleans, east of the city, there's another parish, Louisiana, they call counties parishes, but it's called St. Bernard Parish. And the hurricane storm surge came in and flooded the place. The flood was so big that a barge was actually able to float over the levee in St. Bernard Parish. I mean, that's how much water was over the levee. They had a 20-foot storm surge and a 10-foot levee. Okay, so they had 12 feet of water on top of the levee coming over. Now, that was 20 miles east of where the real problem was. They also had some flooding like we had back in 1965 with Hurricane Betsy on the eastern part of the city. But none of that ever affected the city proper of New Orleans. What happened this time was there was a break in the levee of a drainage canal called the 17th Street Drainage Canal, which is on the west side of New Orleans. It separates New Orleans or Orleans Parish from Jefferson Parish. When this levee broke, and it was a flood wall, which is a piece of concrete injected into a levee, when that broke, the entire Lake Pontchartrain fell into the city of New Orleans and flooded it, which is why you saw water up to the rooftops on the entire city. And the satellite photos from this are just the most sobering things you've ever seen. What happens with water is you got two groups of water and you connect them, they will level themselves out. And the Lake Pontchartrain is 10 times the size of the city of New Orleans. So 1 inch of water in Lake Pontchartrain becomes 10 inches of water in New Orleans.
And it was Lake Pontchartrain, basically, that flooded into the city.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the big problem, the major problem, okay? So if you go through these four levee breaks, there, you know, there, the one in St. Bernard Parish, the barge comes over. Okay, those people flood all the time. They flood every time. God help them, they suffered a 99% loss of all livable households in there. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But that's where they are on the map, and you can see it from a satellite. Secondly, that water came into the eastern part of New Orleans. It was so much water in there that the next break at the Industrial Canal, which is a as the name implies, an industrial canal on the east side of the city, when that broke, it broke not from the canal into the neighborhood, it broke from the neighborhood into the canal. There was so much water in the neighborhood from the storm that it overflowed the levee into the canal. Okay? Now, that obviously didn't cause the major flooding in New Orleans. Then there was the London Avenue Canal, which is right in the center of the geographical center of the city. But all that happened there was they got a little too much water in the thing, and a little of it came over the side. And it was not a major event other than to the neighborhood immediately around the flood. Okay? But there was a disastrous problem that happened on the 17th Street Canal. Now, the 17th Street Canal, you go back in the history of New Orleans. New Orleans was an uninhabitable swamp. In fact, when Thomas Jefferson bought it from Napoleon Bonaparte in France, he sent a team of engineers down to New Orleans, and their official recommendation to the President of the United States was to abandon the city. They said, this place cannot be built upon. There's no way to protect it. Okay, and this was, you know, 1804. 1805?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the late 1800s, about 90 years later, there was this guy named Baldwin Wood. He was an engineer. And he figured out that if you just dug the right canals and you had these new pumps, okay, in the 1890s, you know, the automobile hadn't been invented yet, but the cotton gin had. And they knew about steam power. They were building big machines. And Baldwin Wood figured out that you could build a big, essentially, screw, a turbine, that would lift the water up from down below and drop it over a levee. So they figured out how to drain this huge swamp that was the center of what we call New Orleans today. So these engineers, these are brilliant men, they figured out how to build a major metropolitan city inside of what was an uninhabitable swamp. Right, this was a huge accomplishment. And in order to do this, they knew that they had to pump the water out from the bottom of the swamp, the lowest spot in there, and they had to put it into a canal and pump it out to the lake. If they could get the water, every drop of rain came in, would flow to the lowest spot. They built a canal at the lowest spot. The canal fed into the pumping station. They built the most powerful set of pumps the world has ever seen. These pumps pump 10,000 cubic feet of water per second. That's the six elephants, every second. And they drop it into the drainage canal, and it flows into Lake Pontchartrain. And this system has worked for a long time. I used to work in mid-city at the spot which is the bottom of the bowl. And every time we had a big rainstorm, we got flooded. And the pumps could take a half an inch an hour out. But if we got an inch an hour of rain, we were going to get water. If we got 2 inches, or, you know, more, the more rain we got, the bigger the problem was, but the pumps would always catch up with it. I remember walking around up to my knees in water in mid-city just due to a strong rainstorm. Okay? So the system has worked for a long time. The levees worked. The levees, as the press has reported, were designed to withstand a Category 3 storm. Now, when I was a kid, before Betsy and before Camille, because Camille taught us what a hurricane was, okay? The levees, we had levees, yeah, but nothing compared to what there is today, right? I mean, they doubled, maybe in some cases tripled the sizes of the levees. They put in floodgates all over the place. That city, you drive around, I mean, you feel like you're in an aquatic Belfast, right? This idea that the federal government ignored New Orleans is not accurate, in my opinion, at all, okay? But what happened? Why, after 4 hours after the hurricane passed, when the winds had subsided, the waves had subsided, things were settling down, people were putting up their feet and saying, God, we're lucky once again. How do we get so lucky that the storm turned at the last moment? Because if it had continued on the path that it came in on, it would have just wiped everything out. But it zagged to the east at the last minute. And I think it does that, frankly, because there's a lot of warm, shallow water over there in Mississippi, and that's what pulls hurricanes. But my point is that this is a sophisticated drainage system that has worked well for 100 years. And all of a sudden, we had a problem with it that occurred after the hurricane left. So why do we have a problem? Now, this is where I want people with their computers to start typing in stuff.
Okay. By the way, Ed, we're nearing the end of this side, just so you know. So we're going to be taking a break to turn over to the other side of the CD.
Okay. Well, let me give them a couple of addresses to get them started, and we can catch up after the break.
Sure.
Okay. Go to maps.google.com, or if you want to go to Google, then click on Maps. But it's maps.google.com, and we're going to look at satellite photos, and we're going to bring you right into where the problem was and let you look at it. And let you make up your own mind about what it is that you're seeing. And when the map of the United States comes up, I want you to type in drifter, you know, like the vagabond that doesn't have a home and wanders around, Drifter Lane, that's a address, Drifter Lane, New Orleans. Capitalization does not matter. Punctuation does not matter. just type in four words, Drifter Lane, New Orleans, and Google will bring you to the exact spot that we want to talk about.
All righty. And now, again, the body of water or the facility in New Orleans that we're going to be focusing on largely is the 17th Street Canal, which was not a maritime canal. It was not for ships to navigate, but it was specifically designed as a drainage facility in order to help New Orleans cope with the flooding attendant upon bad weather.
Right, and it pumped the water from the bowl at the bottom of the city, which is called the Mid-City Basin. It pumped it from the Mid-City Basin into Lake Pontchartrain. That is the core. I mean, it's like the liver of the city. That is how the city has survived and cleaned itself up for 100 years. All right? This is the basic anatomy of New Orleans, of why it exists as a city. And what happens is something goes wrong with that model. The central structure fails. And that is what has not been talked about in the press.
And remember that this particular canal is associated with the largest or the most powerful pumps in the world that can pump the equivalent of the volume of six elephants every minute, is it, Ed?
No, every second.
Every second. Okay, so every second that those pumps are operating, a volume of water equal to six elephants is pumped into Lake Pontchartrain, courtesy of the 17th Street Canal.
Which means the moment that canal floods, they have the equivalent of six elephants of water falling over the flood wall, hitting the levee behind it. Now, that's not going to take more than a couple of seconds, a minute at the worst, to erode that levee so much that it can no longer support that concrete flood wall that it has been designed to support.
All righty. Well, that is the basic, that's the dramatis personae, so to speak, or the dramatic landscape that we're going to be looking at. And we're going to be coming back to just what went wrong and how we can grab a hold of this tragedy in terms of understanding the event itself. We're going to be doing that, however, inside, too. Ed, real quickly, tell the listeners where they can get your remarkable book, Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus.
Basically from me, and that means sending a check to me at courtesy of a P.O. Box. That's Edward Haslam. It's a $25 check that covers everything, shipping, all that. The P.O. Box is 15381 Bradenton, Florida. That's Bradenton, Florida is FL, and the zip is 34280.
And we will repeat that again at the end of Side 2. Remember, www.spitfirelist.com. That's the website for Spitfire, the CD duplication service that stocks all of the material I've produced over the years. And on that website, there is a vast amount of information, including written article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs. And at the top of each description are links to a number of different things, books, websites, the WFMU websites, which feature the entire For the Record series, either on streaming real audio or archived. WFMU is podcasting the For the Record shows now. And there is a wealth of information that people can draw on. Also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 526, an interview with Ed Haslam about about Hurricane Katrina, we'll call it. This is being recorded on September 11th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. For Ed Haslam, thanks for listening.